Okay, well, hello everybody. It's very nice to be here. My name is Kristen McLean. I'm the CEO and founder of Bookigee, as you just heard. We are a tech startup based in Miami, Florida, and we work on disruptive and actionable analytics for the publishing market. Right now we're working specifically on tools for authors and marketing. But I started this survey back in 2010 when I was the executive director of the Association of Booksellers for Children. And at that time, this was the first direct-to-consumer survey that had ever been done to the children's book market. And the reason we started it at that time was that there were a lot of shifts happening and escalating in publishing, and we really wanted to understand what was driving factors like choice, discovery, and just general attitudes towards books in sort of a market that was evolving towards digital. So that's where we started, and we've run four waves since then. And we're going to talk a little bit today about some of our baseline findings, which those of you who have heard us speak will recognize. They've been very consistent. And then we've got some exciting new data to share around a lot of different things, particularly on e-books and the influence of bookstores and libraries.
Great. Thank you, Kristen. I'm delighted to be here today. Let me just give you a little background of Bowker. Bowker, as many of you know, has been the ISBN agency for the United States for forever. So we have been in the book business a long time, partners with publishers on really helping them understand their markets. Bowker Market Research is a fairly new, within the last 5 years, endeavor to really partner with publishers and understand the overall book buying habits of Americans and also British people now. So that's kind of our base, our starting point. We actually track 6,000 book buyers each and every month and really understand the totality of their book purchase. So we're able to understand what genres they buy, where they buy them, why they buy them, what other activities surrounding the book buying purchase are important. So from that database of 6,000 people a month, we're able to go deep into some of those subsegments, and one of those segments, of course, are mainly parents who buy books for kids. And so we went back to that group, and that's the basis for this study.
I want to say just a couple of quick things, and the first thing is that we're going to be quick. Okay, we have a lot of slides to show you, and then we also are going to talk a little bit about some of the findings. So we are going to whiz through these slides really fast. I don't want you to get caught up in the charts because the deck will be available to you. We're going to make it available to you right after we're done. So you don't have to scribble. You'll be able to get the deck. But just we really want you to sort of take the key points, and we're going to go through those pretty quickly. And I also want to point out that this survey on an ongoing basis is sponsored by the publishing community. And this recent wave was sponsored by Random House, HarperCollins, Hachette, Disney, Chronicle, and Sesame Street, right? Did I miss anybody? I don't think so. Scholastic. Thank you, Scholastic. Yes, Scholastic. That's a very important one because Scholastic has been with us since the beginning. Those of you guys in the room understand this inherently, but when I leave the children's book community and talk about this study, the one thing I really want to make clear to the rest of the publishing industry, and the reason that I remain involved, is that I think the children's market is the best crystal ball we have for understanding where we're going to be as a market in the next 10, 15, or 20 years. Because the behavior that we're seeing right now in the children's market, both with kids and parents, is really going to affect the behavior that we're going to see in the adult market not too long from now. So that sort of gives you the context, and we'll head right in.
Thanks. So briefly about the methodology. As I said, the core questions were created by a collaboration of the publishers that Kristen just mentioned. So it was a team effort to really understand collectively what publishers would be interested. Some of the subscribers have their individual proprietary questions. We don't share them in general, but they are available. Kristen mentioned there were actually four waves, but we're really focusing here and we're doing trending on three waves because we did some tweaking of the questions for the most recent three waves. So you're going to see a lot of trending information in the data that we're presenting, and some of the power is in the trending. Basically, it's two online surveys, over 1,000 people in both surveys. We have a group of parents who are parents of kids from 0 to 12, and we're asking them about their books. We further segment that into the 0 to 6 and 7 to 12-year-old segments. For that survey, we get information from the parents themselves. We obviously cannot go directly to the children and survey them. We'll also be sharing some data on teenagers, which is our essentially our third segment. We have 1,000 teenagers in this fielding. They needed parental okay to participate, but we're certainly getting firsthand information from them. So let's dig in. I'm going to introduce some of the slides, and then Kristen will talk about some of the implications. So,
all right. So why don't you go ahead and just forward it all the way through. There's a funky. Okay. So I just want to talk really quickly about the baseline findings that we have sort of become the frame through which we view all of this data. The first thing is that the children's market is extremely stable. It's much more stable than any other part of the book market. The changes that we're seeing here are always incremental. They're never really exponential. And that's why we sort of decided to run this survey on a six-month basis, just because it's that stable. Kids are omnivorous consumers of media. This, at this point, should be no surprise to people in this room. But when we first ran this survey, it was an important finding. It used to be that screen media was seen as the enemy of reading, and that reading, any time you spent reading, was better than watching a screen. Today, that's completely gone away. The kids who are reading a lot are also engaging in screen media all the time, and high reading households are also high technology households. Highly local influences on choice, both in the parental level and in the kid level. We call this the bullseye pattern of influence. Children are at the center, then their families, then their community. And in the community, we put people like librarians, booksellers, book fairs, book clubs, anything that gets inside that community layer. And then once you get outside of that, influence drops off like a stone. So mass marketing techniques, TV, licensing, what people report as drivers are not very strong on that end. We do think that it influences things environmentally, but it's not when you ask people what are they thinking about, where are they finding recommendations, it's almost always inside the circle. And then we've seen kids 7 to 12 emerge as an extremely strong consumer force in the last, like, three waves. And it has been going up each time. When you ask parents for 7 to 12, what's driving their choice? It's almost always the kids ask me for it. The kids are telling me about it. The kids are introducing me to new stuff. And then this is really important. Those of you who have seen the survey, wave over wave, we still are not seeing ebook adoption in teens that tracks anywhere near the sales of teen books, both in digital and print. So there's something funky going on there. We're going to talk a little bit more about it. But there's a big disconnect between what teens report their adoption rates are and what we're seeing on the sales side. So here's what we're going to talk about today. We've seen a marked decline in bookstore and library influence over the course of this entire survey. It's been like a drip, 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 3 to 4 points every time we run the survey. It actually has picked up a little bit this time, so we sort of see that escalating. Friends and family took the top spot as influencers for the first time. They've always been in the top three, but in this case, especially in this 0 to 12, they're in the top slot. Parental attitudes towards e-book reading are evolving, and by this we mean we track what the adoption rate of parents in this survey, whether or not they are reading on e-reading devices. They're tracking with the regular market, up around 42% right now. However, when you ask them what they want, how they want their kids to be reading or how their kids are reading, they are starting to show a decent preference towards print. It's nowhere near their own adoption rate as far as e-books is concerned, so I think that's really interesting. Girls are outpacing boys in almost every area of media use and engagement right now. In our teen section of our survey, we looked at everything by gender this time for the first time. We broke it out, and we see that girls are engaging in more media behavior. They are activated in interesting ways by things like liking books, listening to their friends, all the way across the board, and you're going to see that in several ways today. And then again, teens' attitudes towards e-books are snapping back a little bit towards print in this survey. And we're not sure if this is going to be a continuing trend or if this is something we saw just this time. But when we ask them, they're saying they prefer print more now than they did in the spring, which, again, is pretty interesting.
Okay. So in this first section, we're going to highlight some of our findings around acquisition and discovery of kids' books, focusing first on on the younger segments. And most of these slides, they're fairly busy, but what we're doing is tracking those parents with a child's 7 to 12 in the lighter blue, and those with a child 0 to 6 in the darker blue. So we asked this, one of the fundamental questions we asked was where specifically do they get books that they read for fun? So we're excluding books for school in the survey. And top spot has, through all of the waves, has been the public library, followed by an increasingly the powerful influence of Amazon.com. So here's, we're seeing some erosion of library and gains by online retailers like Amazon. In most cases, they kind of match in both segments, both the younger kids and the older kids segments, with the exception of school library, where the older kids tend to get much more of their books from the school library, even the books that they read for fun at the school library.
And the one thing I want to say is as we go through these slides, and I think we do have to go quick because we want to make sure we have time to talk to our panel, we've indicated any place where we've seen a significant decline from the previous wave, which was the spring. So if you see no indicators like the red, it means it's been stable from wave to wave. And I guess that's about it.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, this wave, this most recent wave was November of last year. So
right.
It's very fresh data. So this quickly shows some of the, this is the same data we just showed. It just shows some of the trends on some key metrics, like, for example, in red is the our libraries, and you can see the steady, relative decline, especially in the upper age groups as a acquisition of books, whereas things like Amazon has seen a somewhat more of an increase. These are a little shift towards influencers, not so much acquisition. Now we're talking about influence. What are the things that influence the book purchase? And as Kristen mentioned, it's the child that's at the center of that. So simply the child asking for the book in the store is critical. And obviously the older child has more impact on that influence.
And we don't believe that this is like somebody throwing a tantrum. We think this is parents really tuned into what their kids are wanting, right?
Okay. And important is familiar character or series. That's critical in all age segments. Kids are latching on to a certain character. They like that character. They stay with it. It's a different type of character. It's probably going to be a cartoon character at the younger ages, and more of a series in the older segments. You can see when you go through the slides, you can look at some of the lower influencers. The actual book itself is showing up a little bit less as an influence, but it's still important. Okay. We asked a question: How have purchase habits changed among parents? What are they doing more? And this kind of gives us some insights of what's happening and why there's some erosion of library, but you can see buying more books on Amazon fewer in a physical bookstore is actually a pretty common sentiment among purchasers of children's books. And the second to that is continuing to purchase in bookstores. So we realize, of course, that losing borders and other things like that have certainly helped influence this trend.
And we are seeing this online purchasing behavior and comfort with online sources of recommendation going up in many different ways in the survey. So I think that people are starting to look more online. They're starting to become more comfortable with that around their kids' books. I don't think that necessarily means that they're going to be still having a great discovery process. I think that's still a challenge for us. But I think that their comfort level with sort of figuring out on their own is definitely sort of on the rise.
A little worrisome is the percentage saying they're buying fewer books. Where do they get recommendation? As Kristen mentioned, friends and family, that's now the top spot, whereas browsing the bookstore had been the top spot in prior waves.
Yeah, from spring to fall, this was one of the biggest shifts.
And this is the same data, just showing the trend over the last three fieldings.
So just this is a little different than the previous one. So you can see so the red is friends, blue is bookstore, green is library. So you can see the friends trending up there across three waves, and you can see the green of the library trending down
especially
in the
0 to
6, and you can see the blue in the bookstore trending down in 7 to 12. Okay, so just want to whiz right through this. So friends and family is increasing. We're basically back on a word-of-mouth economy in the children's book market. So how are we going to reach those decision makers, I think, is one of our most critical questions. This significant drop in bookstore and library as a source of acquisition and recommendation, I think, has very, very important implications for us as an industry, because we know from research data that an online experience, the most a consumer will ever sort of most the number the largest number of books that a consumer will ever see at any one time is around 50, as opposed to walking into a really rich bookstore environment where their browsing experience they can be exposed to many more titles. So if we lose our sources of book exploration like that, how are we going to duplicate that for our consumers? Online children's book purchasing is speeding up. We saw that. And again, children's central drivers of purchasing behavior, 7 to 12 especially, but 0 to 6 also. So what does that mean about our marketing and reaching gatekeepers?
So now we're going to focus a little more on the environment. We'll run through these quickly. We just wanted to know what devices people have, television, laptops, et cetera. So with all of these things that are in the household, these are generally high technology households in most cases. How important are the following? And you've got parents still saying that print books are, in fact, the most important of these media. There could be some survey bias, because, I mean, they've been answering some questions about books, but they're saying that books, print books in particular, remain very important, followed closely by DVDs. So as Kristen has said many times, it's not an either-or. It's a companion.
Yeah, and I don't think this is a surprise, right? These are our customers, so they're going to value print books. This is not so shocking. However, I think the fact that this has been consistent and has remained consistent when we ask them about the value of books over other media across all of the waves since we started in 2010, their attitudes towards books have been rock solid. So the fear that we had when we started the survey, which is that we were going to lose readers, that kids weren't going to be reading, that screen time was, you know, that they were going to, the brain drain, there's no data that we've seen to support the idea that kids are reading less. And in fact, we're starting to see some data that kids are reading more. It's been reinforced. The Kaiser Family Foundation study of media from 8 to 18 reinforced this. Back in 2010, when they saw that books were the only traditional media that had not lost ground to screen time in the previous 10 years. So we really believe that the reading culture in these families, in these households, is very strong.
Just a few slides on the family's attitudes to e-books. This is obviously a digital conference, so we first asked of the parents. This is the parents now. Do you currently read e-books? Simple question. And we see the yes percentage trending upwards over time. So, you know, this is fairly reflective of the market overall. We're having, you know, over 40% of parents saying that they are now reading e-books. So there's no very strong bias against digital reading in the data that we're sharing.
On the parent's part, yeah.
Yep. So what's happening? How do they perceive what's happening with the kids themselves? We asked, well, how do you as a parent prefer that your children read books, digitally or in e-book format? And this is where it's really steady as she goes. The percentage saying print has, it was hovering around 70% in the 0 to 6 and 60% in the 7 to 12. And that's very marginal difference. We've noticed some minor uptick, but it's an evolution, more of a, not a revolution.
Yeah, and the margin of error in this study, just I don't think we mentioned it, is 3%. So we really aren't really thinking anything is significant beyond 3%. So when you look at the margin of error, there's actually been no shift between spring and fall this year in terms of their sort of openness. And in previous waves, where we did see some openness was not necessarily in I want my kids to read e-books, but in I have no preference or they could read both. That's the area where we've seen stretchiness in the last year or so. So this is not, you know, an exponential push for parents to push kids into digital. I think there's something more complicated going on right now.
Okay. We asked why are those parents who say they do prefer that their children read print, you know, what are the top reasons for that? And this is the large sample here. It's all about focus. It's less distraction from other content. Those are closely correlated. Prefer look and feel of print is also important. So all of these are important drivers to keeping parents and children reading e-books. I'm sorry, reading print books. And the reverse, those who do prefer e-books, which is a much smaller sample, so the error margins are probably a lot higher here. Those that do like e-books are saying that they prefer that it's easier to carry around more titles, so it's the portability. They think it's fun and cool, which seems to be somewhat stronger on the 7 to 12-year-olds, and they're drawn to technology.
So we are continuing to see parental e-book rise, you know, and we'll keep tracking that because we want to be able to control for parental attitudes towards e-books versus what they're saying for their kids. We think that their attitude towards e-reading for their kids is kind of ambivalent. I couldn't really come up with a better word than that. I think it's ambivalent. I think they're really concerned still about the issues that they've always been concerned about, that their kids are focusing, that their kids are reading, that they are not distracted. So a lot of the things that we're seeing in the larger culture around digital distraction are definitely at play for the parents of these kids. And we have a real question about whether or not, in general, ebook adoption and digital adoption in the kids' market is going to be kind of a flat till Q4 pattern. So we haven't seen really any movement from spring to fall. And we run the two waves of this survey, one in the fall and one right, we're going to start it actually in a few weeks. So we bracket the fourth quarter. And when we report on our next wave of findings, which will be around BEA time, we will be able to tell you a little bit more clearly whether or not we think it's developing into a fourth quarter phenomena where the bumps that we see every year are tied to new devices in the household and new purchasing around Christmas.
So let's finish up this our presentation section with the young adult market. So again, now we're going to the teenagers themselves. These are kids between 13 and 17. We ask a question: are books as important to them as other things in their environment? We also ask them what they have access to. We're not showing that slide here, but we want to know what role do books play relative to other media that's in their environment. And in these slides, we're showing some of the differences between males and females. And here we see that, for most say that it's an equally important. You know, they try to balance books with other media pretty well. Notice there's there was an uptick. A higher percentage of males are more likely to say it's less important. Books are less important to them. Where specifically do teens go to get their books that they read for fun? Again, we're excluding school books. Amazon continues to grow from prior waves. Similar to what we saw with the parents of younger kids, the public library is seeing some erosion, as are bookstores. This is just showing some of the devices that they have. Most have a television. Surprisingly, television is actually becoming less important in the lives of teenagers. They don't need that kind of broadcast. They don't have that broadcast mentality. They can stream what they want when they want. Laptops and video games also very very ubiquitous. Notice the on the bottom we've highlighted some of the growing percentage of teenagers now with Apple devices like iPhones and iPads.
So the things that are circled in yellow are things where we're seeing really strong gains in the household, wave over wave. So, you know, the laptop over a home computer is a trend that we've seen talked about in the larger market. We're definitely seeing it here. Video game systems are on the rise. You can see actually in three waves we've gone from 58% of households to 71% of households having video game systems. And we'll see a little bit about how that breaks up by gender in a couple slides, which is interesting. And then Apple is definitely the clear winner in the technology gain that we're seeing. We're definitely seeing strong gains and strong aspiration for the Apple platform. Okay. So here you are, right? So the yellow is the video game system. This is the same thing broken out by gender, with the light blue being female and the dark blue being male. So you can see that of the users of that system, 71% are male, 39% are female. This is the one area in our entire study where we're seeing males significantly outpace females in media behavior. In every other aspect, girls outpace boys. Okay. And you can see that here, the red that's sticking out, that's the female answers to these, and this is meaty behavior. So I don't know if those of you in the back can read it, but just from the top down, it goes read books for fun, discuss books with my parents, discuss books with friends, make status updates on Facebook or Twitter. You know, it's a 21 to 30% male-female. Discussing books, 11 to 14%, and on and on. So girls are way more active in book behavior, media behavior, when we break it out by gender.
And it's one of the non-book items, streaming content on services such as Netflix or Hulu. That's where they're pretty comparable. That's mm-hmm. the only place where they're pretty comparable.
Okay, so books still holding their value with the teen market and with the adult market. We said girls are outpacing boys. I think this is very significant from a marketing point of view, and I think it just throws more fuel on the fire about boys and reading and what's going on there. And then girls are not only more engaged in media behavior, but they're more engaged in content around the book. So they are the ones who are on your websites. They are the ones who are liking your products. They're the ones who are telling their friends and engaging in really social behavior around books. Girls are definitely, definitely involved with your content.
Okay. Like we did with the parents of younger kids, we looked at their e-reading behavior, and we find the percentage of e-book reading among teens was rising in the first three waves, but has flattened since the spring. The percentage current reading ebooks is again fairly flat, but it's females who are doing more e-reading, at least in the fall of this year.
Yeah, there's a 9% gap between girls and boys when we break out that question by gender, who's reading. So it's been flat overall, but we see quite a big difference between girls and boys.
As mentioned earlier, there's even some evidence of moving back to print among this group. In spring 12, we saw 61% say they prefer print. That's actually risen just beyond the margin of error to 66%. We have some thoughts about that. You know, some of my thoughts is the Hunger Game phenomenon. You've got kids who just want to have that print book handy that they can share around, and it's just something tangible. They're doing a lot of swapping, and they want the latest and greatest content. So that could be some reason why there was this snap back to print in the last wave.
I also think that the shininess is kind of done, right, for e-readers. I think that most kids now and most parents sort of have a sense of what the technology is, how they use it, and I think that they're just making more nuanced choices right now around it. It's not just what we originally set out to check when we started the survey. We really thought teens were going to adopt e-readers pretty fast. And we sort of had a snapback even back in 2010 because teens really had a very strong preference for print. And we've seen that go up a little bit. But I would go back to something that I said back then in 2010, which is that e-reading, especially standalone e-readers, are a productivity platform. Right? They're not a social platform. And teens are social creatures. So they are, in some ways, print books are more social than e-books for them because they can pass those books around. It says something about them, what they're reading. And generally, they just don't have to think about productivity the same way, a more mature reader who has to carry around 100 books on an airplane has to think about it. So we are not seeing that really strong drive into digital that we thought we might see back in 2010.
We asked, what does the future hold? Will you be reading more ebooks in the future? Again, only 10% are saying that they'll mainly be reading ebooks. We had been seeing some expansion of that, reading both print and e in prior waves, but that too has actually held steady since the last wave. Why are they resistant to ebooks, those that are? Many don't see a need, or just feel the cost of getting a device. They just don't yet have device access at this point. And this is one thing to consider when we look at the next wave, because now there'll be another holiday shopping period, and that could have some impact.
The reason this is sort of a reinforcing slide for why I think there's actually a very thoughtful process going on in here. If you look at the blue bar, that's the cost of getting the devices too high. And back in fall of 2011, a year ago, 53% said that was a barrier. It came down in the spring to 46%. It's now at 40%. So the barrier to entry over the device is definitely decreasing. But at the same time, we're seeing prefer the experience of a printed book going up. So I think there's a very intentional kind of process going on with teens and these books. I don't think we really have the full story yet.
Okay.
So this is a little treat that I threw in here, and this is actually, I think, a really important follow-on to what we just talked about. And we're going to do it very, very quickly, and actually, if our other two panelists are here and you want to come up and take your seats, we're going to just go through this really quick, and then we'll go into the questions. But every time we run this survey, we do a deep dive into some area that the publishers really want to look at more closely, each wave. And in the spring, we wanted to dive into the YA crossover market. We really wanted to study this gap between what teens were reporting they were doing and what the sales were saying for YA books in the mainstream market. So we're going to present these findings to you guys because we didn't have them for you last year. They were really fresh. And I think you guys are going to really find this pretty amazing. So you want to talk about it?
Sure.
Yeah.
So this is now actually is our tracker data. Remember I said Bowker has this monthly tracker. So we went and looked at the young adult genre. So these are not young adult people. This is the genre. And we looked at what are the percentage of people by age who are buying YA books. And surprisingly, or at least at the time, you know, only 16% of young adult books are actually being purchased by teenagers. So we've really seen another conference with Scholastic about this whole issue. But you can see, you know, 18 to 29 year olds, they're really young adults. I mean, the whole young adult pie has really expanded into the adult. And by the way, these are people who bought for themselves.
Yeah, just I just want to say, so when you combine the 18 to 29s and the 30 to 44, you guys, that's 62% of your market. 62% of your consumers for YA are over the age of 18, right? It's actually more than that, actually, if you sort of go all the way up to the top, right? It's more like over 80% of your consumer market for YA are not teenagers.
And just to show that they're buying these books for themselves, not for others, although as you get into the older ages, you're seeing more young adult books being purchased as gifts.
Yeah, so 94% in the 18 to 29 are buying for themselves, and 80% in the 30 to 44 bracket are buying for themselves.
Okay. This is a wider, of those people who buy YA books, this is showing the percentage, much higher percentage of e-books. So we're starting to see some of why YA books appear to be sold in e-book format. As opposed to teenagers themselves who are not buying an e-book format. You know, this is a reason for that. Okay. We think that at the upper levels, it's possible that having a book in e-book form, you know, maybe makes the experience a little more private. They can't be quite as social about it as the teenager. So that an older adult may be more intrigued by having the book in e-book form. If this is a question, if you were interested in buying an ebook but it wasn't available, what would people do? Most would go right to print. So there's the substitution is pretty quick and easy. Okay.
So the one thing I will just say to sort of close down that section before we go into the questions and talk a little bit about the findings is that the reason that I think that this YA crossover piece is so important to you guys is the fact that not only, you know, is it a completely different demographic buying your book than the one that, you know, we think when we think of YA, but also these guys are the highest frequency e-readers. They're reading at a frequency as high as romance or mystery. They're really committed digital readers. And they're so committed to the product, to the author of the series, that if they can't get it digitally, they'll read it in print. They're like your dream customer. So, you know, I think the question that we talked about a lot with the sponsor publishers is, well, what does that mean for my marketing? How do I reach those guys? And, you know, do I need to be doing anything different? I don't know. It's an open question.